Well, welcome. I'm glad to have you here for another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. Today, we are talking about the power of your attitude. Lead Yourself First is here for you. It's your personal growth program. W.W. Zieg said, "Nothing can stop the man with the right mental attitude from achieving his goal. Nothing on earth can help the man with the wrong mental attitude." And Lead Yourself First is a process for you. It's designed specifically to help you develop the leadership attitude that's going to help you today and every single day. And there's a lot of value in developing a positive attitude. Now, I used to think that my attitude was a consequence of whatever had happened in my life. And it wasn't my fault, my attitude. I mean, I was just a victim. You made me mad, or you did whatever that allowed me to be happy. And what I discovered was that I had more power over that than I had ever imagined. And by using that power, I learned how to improve in my leadership skills, in my ability to influence other people, and how to coordinate to get things done through others. Now, you know that for these lessons, I always ask to help focus at the beginning of the lesson. How are you going to act after this lesson? How are you going to act? How are you going to apply something we've talked about in today's lesson? What is something you can change from based on today's lesson? You were doing it one way, now you're going to change it and do it another way. Or what can you teach someone else? Our goal is to be a river, not a reservoir. Our goal is to be able to share the ideas that we're learning. You don't have to have arrived to be able to share what you're learning. Now, I've been looking forward to this lesson. I say that a lot, but it's true. I look forward to teaching this lesson because this lesson can change your life. And if you shift your thinking, it can be a huge difference. It's the difference between darkness and a bright, shining light. This really can be transformative. Now, today's lesson, I'm going to cover some of the best information in the world that I've been able to find about your attitude. At the end of the lesson, the ball's going to be in your court. Will you do anything with the ideas that we talk about? If you do, you're going to get great results because these are proven and time-tested ideas. Now, maybe this lesson will excite you and you'll realize, you know, I need to do even more. And if that's you, I promise at the end of the lesson, I'll share with you a way that you can do that. Fair enough? So let me jump in. Let me ask you to reflect as we're getting started talking about our attitude. Does attitude matter? Does your attitude matter? And then let's assume that your answer is, well, yeah, I think it probably does matter. How does your attitude reflect on your work? And how does your attitude reflect on the performance of the team? Is it possible that there's an impact? When I think about attitude, I'm immediately reminded of a quote from the movie Office Space. Now, Office Space is an old movie, but it really captured a lot about what's wrong with the way that work in contemporary times works, or often doesn't work. And I think the reason that movie became a cult classic is because it reflects our shared experiences of workplaces that often don't make a lot of sense. The main character in that film said, "My only real motivation is to not be hassled. That, and the fear of losing my job. But you know, Bob, that will only make someone work hard enough not to get fired." Have you ever worked with anybody who worked just hard enough to not get fired? What was it like to work with them? What would it be like if you were that person who was working just hard enough to not get fired? It's not a good thing. And I think for many employees, they do have that point of view. And if you're that kind of employee, or you have people on your team who are like that, how does that affect your boss? And if you're the boss with that kind of attitude, what is that going to do to the team? Now, you may know that I've got 5 sons, and we're involved with scouting. And I'm an assistant scoutmaster for the troop, and I spend a good amount of time with young boys. I love scouting because it is a great learning lab for leadership skills. It's a great place to experiment with cooperation and teamwork. And the boys are organized into small groups called patrols. And each of the patrols has a leader. And that person's title, their job role, is patrol leader. And then all the patrols roll up to the head of the boys, and that young man is called the senior patrol leader. And his job is to direct the troop. His job is to plan the meetings and organize the groups and move the whole process forward. And I had a really interesting time at a meeting this week watching a young man who is a senior patrol leader try to navigate what it's like to teach a group of maybe 20 boys about communication and leadership and setting standards and quality. Fascinating to see him in that lab as he's experimenting with that and learning a ton. Now, things don't often work well. In fact, you might imagine there's conflict on a regular basis between people, and Boy Scouts provides a place where they can fail in a safe way, where nobody gets hurt, nobody dies when they fail. Now, I remember years ago, one young man was having some conflict with his patrol, and the adult leaders, we try to facilitate rather than direct. We want to try and help them develop the skills themselves, because our mission is to prepare them for life, and resolving conflict is definitely a life skill. But unfortunately, the patrol was unable to come to a productive resolution of their problem, and eventually we had to step in and help mediate the problem. Now, I spoke with a particularly bright young man, and he had a strong sense of the way he wanted things to go. He was quite stubborn in his position, and he was unwilling to negotiate, unwilling to work on it. When I asked him why he couldn't compromise, he said, "Because my patrol is stupid." Now, I'm sure that some of these boys sometimes act foolishly. We all do, and particularly young men in groups. But I'm also confident that some of the issue in that particular conflict was related to that young man and his attitude. He was the patrol leader for his patrol and was unable to get done what he wanted to get done. He was the boss, and he had a lousy attitude. And if the boss has a bad attitude, that is going to be a big problem. See, in response to my question at the beginning of the lesson, does your attitude matter? I firmly believe that attitude matters. It matters in a profound way. Charles Swindoll said, "Attitude is more important than past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than what people do or say. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill." There's a couple of quotes in our lesson today that I want to camp out on a little bit, and this is one of them. I'm going to repeat that quote. Charles Swindoll said, "Attitude is more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than what people do or say. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill." Swindoll is telling us that our attitude has more of an impact in our lives than our past. It has more of an impact than whether we have an education or not. I've got one of my mentors. He had a learning disability. He stuttered, and he was unable to achieve in school. School just didn't work for my mentor, Paul Martinelli. And yet, Paul, whose brother has a PhD and is a college professor, Paul had dropped out of high school, and Paul was a janitor and worked as a janitor for many years. He owned his own cleaning company. Today, Paul is a multi-millionaire. Paul is a professional speaker by profession, and he inspires people all the time. He overcame his past. He overcame his lack of an education. Swindoll says it's more important than money. It's more important than the life situation that you're in. It's more important than what people do or what people say. It's more important than your appearance. It's even more important than how gifted you are or what skills you have. That is a pretty big deal. And it's worthy of thinking about. What is your attitude doing for you, or what is your attitude doing to you? Your attitude is extremely powerful. It is more powerful, as Swindoll said, than your circumstances. It's more powerful in your feelings about the way you act and in your ability to influence others toward action. I often say that there's not a military commander in the world who would try to inspire his troops by saying, "Follow me, we're all going to die." It doesn't work that way. It's amazing the correlation between attitude and success. Now, it's true that optimistic people are not always right. My dad was the eternal optimist, and often things did not fall his way. But the fact is that optimists are better able to deal with the negative situations in life. They find good opportunities out of them. Do you remember reading the book Winnie the Pooh as a kid? It was a tradition in my family. My grandfather used to read it to me as a child, and I've got some good memories of that book. Or maybe you saw the movie Christopher Robin. It was an enjoyable film, too. I used to work with a man that I teased about being Eeyore. Now, those of you who remember Winnie the Pooh may recall that Eeyore the donkey was the pessimist's pessimist. Pooh's Eeyore would say things like, "I suppose that's the sort of thing you like, if you like that sort of thing." Eeyore simply could not find a positive in his circumstances. Eeyore had an attitude problem, and it often landed Eeyore in trouble. Having a bad attitude does not make your situation any better. In fact, a bad attitude often will make your situation even worse. Attitude takes your situation and it amplifies it. If you're in a bad place, a bad attitude will make the situation seem even worse. But if you're in the exact same situation and you have a positive attitude, it shifts your thinking. It doesn't change the facts, but it shifts the way you think about the facts that are there. It shifts your team's perspective, and it can actually help. I like this quote from Earl Nightingale. Nightingale says, "A great attitude does much more than turn on the lights in our worlds. It seems to magically connect us to all sorts of serendipitous opportunities that were somehow absent before the change." Having a positive attitude helps you become aware of opportunities. It provides illumination and light to situations that allow us to see possibilities that we simply had not seen before. There's an adage that says, when the student is ready, the master will appear. And having a positive attitude equips you as the student to be ready so that the master can appear. The master is already there waiting to teach you the lesson, but he can't teach you until you are ready. Now, some of you might be sitting out there. Maybe this is you. Maybe you are saying, "Tom, I don't care what kind of attitude you have. Attitude is just not important compared to real skills. You can't convince me that attitude is more important than the ability to actually do the job." Well, you're right, and not so right. I mean, if I'm hired to be your brain surgeon and I have a great attitude but no medical training, that's not going to be good for you. On the other hand, let's say that I'm not the highest skilled person. I'm just average or maybe slightly above average, and you've got an assignment for me that is a stretch assignment. It's just out of my reach, or I can barely reach it with my current level of technical skill. If I've got a great attitude, I'm confident I can make the stretch, and my confidence is directly linked to my probability of actually making it. On the other hand, let's say that I'm super smart at my job and you want to assign work to me, but I've got the world's worst attitude. I am completely negative about just about everything. How much do you want to work with me? If I'm in a position where I'm struggling and I need help, how much do you want to help me? And I'll tell you this, the research definitely backs me up on this. That many people would say, look, if it came down to a choice between working with a brilliant jerk or working with a marginally competent, nice person, I would take one for the team. I would choose to work with the brilliant jerk before I worked with a nice but marginally capable person. But when you look at what people actually do, they avoid the jerks and they choose the nice guy in incredible numbers because attitude is infectious. A negative attitude will run rampant through your organization, and a positive attitude will do the same. It'll run rampant and bring your organization to a much bigger and better place. Other research studies show that when it comes to your overall success at work, your technical skill, your ability to do the job, only counts for 13% of your results. Only 13%? Seriously? Now, I know that attitude can often be a challenge. I came across this prayer about attitude. I liked it. I thought I'd share it with you. The prayer goes like this: Dear God, so far today I've been okay. I have not gossiped. I've not lost my temper. I've not been greedy, grumpy, selfish, or overindulgent. And I'm very thankful for that. But in a few minutes, I'm going to get out of bed. And from then on, I'm probably going to need a lot of help. We all sometimes need help with our attitude. But there's something really, really interesting about our attitude. At one time, Andrew Carnegie was the world's wealthiest man. And he had been able to connect with people and influence them and lead them in such a way that he was able to amass more money than anyone else in the world at that time. Here's what he said about attitude. He called it a sunny disposition. He says, a sunny disposition is worth more than fortune. Young people should know that it can be cultivated, that the mind, like the body, can be moved from the shade into sunshine. Let us move it then. Carnegie was digging in to some of the same things that Swindoll was talking about. He said a good attitude, a sunny disposition, is worth more than money. What Carnegie's saying is if you took away his money but gave him his positive attitude, he would get the money back. And he was saying that when you're young, you should learn that you can cultivate or grow your attitude, that an attitude is something that you can choose and you can invest in and you can create. And that your mind can be grown and strengthened just like your body can be grown and strengthened. And with that knowledge that it can happen, he provides an encouragement, an instruction. And we all ought to be willing to listen to somebody who's been at that level of success. He said, let us move it then. Take action to build your sunny disposition. Because either you control your attitude or your attitude controls you. A sunny disposition is worth more than fortune. Young people should know that it can be cultivated, that the mind, like the body, can be moved from the shade into sunshine. Let us move it then. Now, you remember earlier in this lesson I said I worked with Eeyore? My Eeyore at work, he was so negative, and I would call him Eeyore to his face. It was a running joke with us. But I believe that if you handed Eeyore that $100 bill as a gift, he would complain that it wasn't $200. Or he would tell you that it really would have come in handy if you'd given him $100 2 weeks ago. But I've got an amusing story about Eeyore. You see, despite his feeling and his repeated claims that the world was stacked against him, I was able to prove conclusively that his attitude was entirely under his control. His attitude was a choice that he willfully made. Now, during that season, my grandparents were aging, and my grandmother got to the point where she could no longer drive her car, and so she'd asked me to sell her car for her. And it really was the used car driven by the little old lady who drove it only to the grocery store and to church on Sunday. It was an older car that had very, very low miles and had been meticulously maintained. It was a great car. And I knew that Eeyore was looking for a reliable car for his son to drive to school. And I asked if he might be interested in buying it. Now, there's one thing that I absolutely know for certain about cars, and they always need maintenance. There's always a story to tell about a problem with cars. Something breaks, or it wiggles, or rattles, or maybe even falls off. And when Eeyore said he was serious about buying that car, I knew I was going to be in trouble, because I could just foretell that I was going to be hearing an endless litany of all the problems and pains and inconveniences that that car caused him over the course of his life. Well, I knew I didn't want to hear about that car after the sale. And I also knew that Eeyore was, well, he was tight with a dollar. I wanted to protect myself, and I have to confess that I really feel like I had a flash of insight, maybe even a tinge of brilliance, because I wrote up a purchase agreement for the vehicle. And I literally included this clause, which read, if the buyer ever complains about anything related to this car, he will immediately pay the seller $5 cash for each negative statement. You ever buy a car? Have you ever seen that clause in the purchase agreement? Well, I wrote it in that purchase agreement. And when Eeyore saw it, he smiled broadly. He laughed loudly. He signed the purchase agreement. And you know what happened? Eeyore never said a negative word to me about that car. He drove that car for another 160,000 miles. And over the next several years, every single time I saw him, and I mean every single time I saw him, he would smile and he would make a point of telling me what a great car that was and how it was working well for him every single time. His complaining had become a habit, and he could choose to be positive. I'm sure over the years that car needed all kinds of work, but Eeyore never mentioned that to me. He focused on the good parts about the car. You see, we choose what we focus on, and it's important to note that we all have challenges and setbacks. The fact is that people who get divorced or quit jobs or have a bad attitude turn difficult times into better times over time. And the more you can embrace having a good attitude, the richer it's going to be for you. So we're getting closer to the end of this lesson, and I want to share a story. It's one of my favorite stories about a Canada goose. There was this goose that started thinking about flying south for the winter, but he was tired. He was sick and tired of that trip. He said to himself, you know what, winter just can't be that bad. I am staying. So, as the rest of his friends headed south, he stayed. And day after day, the temperature outside dropped, and there was less and less food. And he found himself getting more and more uncomfortable. Now, one day in mid-November, a particularly cold and wet and drizzly day, he thought to himself, you know, I have made a mistake. I have to get out of here. And cold and wet, he decided he was going to leave. And he took off in the rain, and he flew upward toward the clouds, and he headed south. But he had a problem. Once he got up into the higher altitude, his wet wings got heavier and heavier because the lower temperatures led to wet wings becoming icy. And the ice began to build up. It got harder and harder for him to flap his wings. And it wasn't long before his wings were so stiff that he just couldn't do it anymore. He couldn't keep flying at all, and he began to fall toward the ground. As he tumbled, he was certain that his doom was soon to come. But eventually, as he got closer and closer to the ground, he managed to regain a small bit of control over his descent. And fighting through the ice and the pain, he managed to glide his way into only a relatively minor crash landing in a barnyard, and he was certain that he was about to die at this point, and he was gasping for breath. And about that time, a cow in the barnyard steps right over top of him and drops a plop right on him. Can you imagine? Here I am, right about to die, and a cow drops a plop on me right at the end of my life. Could it get any worse? But enveloped in the warmth of that plop, the ice begins to melt. Warming up, the goose gains some hope. He thinks, I'm going to live after all. Filled with joy, the goose begins to sing. Hearing the singing bird, a barnyard cat comes over. He carefully begins to remove the plop from the goose, and as soon as he has the goose sufficiently cleaned off, he eats the bird. Now, from this story, I take away three lessons. One, everyone who drops a plop on you is not your enemy. Number two, everyone who cleans a plop off of you is not your friend. And number three, when someone drops a plop on you, keep your mouth shut. That's a silly story, and I hope it made you smile. The bird's attitude about flying south is what got him in trouble, and letting his emotions control his behavior got him in even more trouble. Each of us has the power to choose. We choose our attitude. So it's about time for you to be creating your personal action plan. And as you're getting ready for that, I want to share with you today's closing thought. Your attitude's your choice. What are you choosing? How would other people describe your attitude? Would they say you're a person with a sunny disposition? Or might they say something else? Are you Eeyore? Are you a dark room? How is your attitude affecting the people around you, your friends, your family, your coworkers? Based on your reflection on your attitude. What do you need to do differently? What happens in your life that triggers you to go negative? And what if you could be intentional about being grateful? As I record this, it's November. It's almost that time of the year when we in the U.S. start thinking about Thanksgiving. What can you be thankful for? Because thankful people generally have a much more positive attitude. What if you could find two things each day that you could say out loud that you were happy about? How are you going to work on your attitude today? For your action plan, what's the one idea you're going to apply, change, or teach? And maybe you're with some other folks as you're listening to this, and it might be a good idea to talk about the dynamics of attitude in your group. Who tends to go negative? Who tends to be the super positive person? And how can you improve the attitude of the overall group? Now, you might be listening to this and think, you know what, my attitude is an issue for me, and I want to get better at this. I want to go deeper. Well, I've got a four-session coaching program on attitude that I would love to do with you. And it really helps you think about your attitude and about your performance. And what would it be like if everybody on your team was on the same team, focused on the same goal, and working with positive attitudes? I would love to spend some time with you going through this. And the cost for this is $199 a person. And in these four sessions, you're going to get practical help that you can immediately put into use that's going to help your team and help you with your performance. If you're interested, drop me an email, tom@brighthillgroup.com, tom@brighthillgroup.com, and we'll get it set up. Thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I am looking forward to hearing from you next time.